For the first time ever, I am thrilled to say we have an official sponsor for the Dirt Talk podcast, and that's Ariat. I've worn Ariat boots on every job site I've visited over the years, traveling in them across five continents. More importantly, I have yet to find a single project where working folks, unlike me, are not wearing Ariat boots and workwear in every condition imaginable. And there's really good reason for that, and that's because it's phenomenal stuff. And the more I've learned about Ariat and the company, the more I've loved their brand. So with this, Ariat is offering any Dirt Talk listener 10% off their next Ariat order at ariat.com/dirttalk. That's 10% off boots, jeans, and workwear at ariat.com/dirttalk or at the link in this episode's description. With that, let's get to the show.
Hey everyone, another episode of Dirt Talk for you today, like every week, trying to keep it consistent. It's a lot of work, but we are getting it done. A lot of cool people to talk to. So this week, we got Mr. Nick Frederick. He is the Vice President of Wittek Excavating out of Crete, Illinois. They operate all over Chicago area and a little bit further than that. Nick, thanks for joining us on this beautiful Saturday morning.
Yeah, thanks, Aaron. Honored to be a part of this.
Yeah, I wouldn't go that far, but you're here, so I appreciate you taking an hour.
Absolutely.
Well, can you just, before we get into who you are, what you do, can you just explain the business, where you guys are at this year, what the business actually looks like, your mass excavation, so you guys just specialize in moving dirt, right?
Yeah, that's our niche. That's what we do well. So we focus on mass earth projects, mainly in the industrial, commercial, mining, landfill, residential site development sectors.
Yep.
We stick to that. That's what we do well. That's what we've done well for a long time. And we're looking to possibly diversify some more, but for right now we're gonna stick to the mass earth.
Love it. You're unique because a lot of the people I talk to on this show have been, and a lot of our partners, you know, a lot of them now, their last name is the company. So it's like, you know, the last episode I just had Garrett Moss, you know, Moss Utilities. And there's a lot of these younger guys like your age that have started these companies, I don't know, 5-10 years ago, are blowing and going. Or we've talked to some of the people, you know, the next generation. So my dad was doing it, or my granddad was doing it. You are the next generation of Wittek, but you are not the son of the founder. You're the son-in-law. So how did you get involved in the company to begin with?
Yeah, great question. I've known Tom Whitfoot, who's our president, and my father-in-law. We met each other in our families met in church. We all went to the local church here in Crete. So that's where our families met. Us kids went to school together. I met my wife at church in sixth grade. And we dated in high school, started dating in high school. And then we started working for Wittek in high school. It's kind of all, I have to get this one right because I'll get crud for it. But I think I was working here before I started dating my wife.
Okay.
My wife might tell me it's the opposite. It was all very close. But anyway, started working here, started dating my wife, went through high school, and then about into 1 or 2 years into college, I was going to Purdue here in Hammond, Indiana. At night and still working. My wife was attending Trinity Christian College. We got married. I think we were into our second year of college.
Really?
Yeah. I stopped. I didn't finish. My wife kept going. She ended up getting a bachelor's degree in math and a minor in theology.
Holy smokes.
Yeah. So I have a educated, very educated wife. She's an awesome woman, and she supports me. She's a strong woman of faith. just an awesome partner to be in life with.
Growing up, were you involved in dirt construction, or you met this family, and then that's when you got involved in the earthwork world?
No, so nobody in my family was in the dirt business. Mm. But as a kid, you know, I loved the tractors. When our subdivision was being built in the early 90s, where we grew up, the company that was digging all the house basements, we were fairly close with, and he would leave his 953 in front of our house on purpose, so that I could, me and my brother and some of these other neighborhood kids could play with them, you know, nice. Crawl on them, yeah. mess with them,
yeah.
you know, and then if he had time, we'd actually, you know, take us around and do stuff, finish grade in a house basement or something simple, nothing too complicated. So I would say that was like maybe the earliest experience for me, but it wasn't a family thing. I didn't grow up in an earthworks family. It kind of all started early high school, you know, maybe my freshman year of high school. Really started, I would see these large earthwork contractors. Some of them we compete with today, but I really never thought that back then that we'd be here today. But yeah, just driving to school in the morning and be running down the local highway here and see these massive dirt jobs, just a ton of yellow iron going back and forth, and just being totally blown away at just the coordination, the power, and just the mass, just the change that you see in one day. You know, go from just, oh, that was a cornfield this morning, and then be heading home from school that night and there's a pond there, and not a baby pond either. So I think that's what started really getting my gears rolling to wanting to get involved in it. And it all kind of fell into place, you know, knowing that Tom had a company like this, super interested in getting involved and working towards it. So I started here in my sophomore year of high school, right when I got my license, and then did small things around here. We had a landscape and materials yard. People come in and get rock or topsoil. I learned a lot from my wife's grandfather. He was a big mentor for me. That was Pete Whitfoot. And he was always there in the yard. You know, he kind of ran that small little portion of our business then. So learned a lot from him. And then just stuck with it. Just, what can I do? You know, listen to the guys around you. Eventually got into the laborers union when I graduated high school. And started as a laborer then out on the job sites. Check and grade. We weren't big with GPS. Couldn't really afford it at the time. As a startup, you know, we started in 2001. So by the time I was out of high school, it was 2007. So we were still kind of a young company getting our name out there. So yeah, check and grade the old way, you know, hubs and levels, stick rulers, pulling tapes, string line. That's how we checked our grade. And I'm appreciative to understand that concept. We still tell guys, even with GPS, GPS is just a tool to help us be more efficient and to be better. But at the end of the day, we still need to understand the concept of knowing how to check grade and grade itself, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, then got into the operators union, a few years after that, and, was able to spend some time on a 621B scraper for a few years.
Yeah, that is.
Yeah, a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's comfort and luxury right there.
It was. Yeah, it was. You know, you get some of the guys that don't really tell you what the cushion hitch is for. So you run your first half of your day without a cushion hitch going up a landfill.
Yeah.
You know, just the fun parts of being a young whippersnapper, and the old timers just get, you know, having some fun with you. But, no, I appreciate all those times, you know, so did that time in the seat was a great experience for me. Learned a lot. And then, eventually as the company grew, you know, we just needed more, you know, more managers, more people watching out for, you know, what's the direction of the company and things like that. So I moved into the office and around, 2012, 2013. Time frame as just a project manager, estimator, and learning from my father-in-law, you know, what he knew and in that world.
How's
and that's
it,
kind of adapting.
How's it been? But, like, you know, you were dating his daughter back when you started. So you were just dating before you guys got married. How was that? Like working for your girlfriend's father? Was it difficult? Was it just natural? Or what was that dynamic like?
I mean, obviously it was difficult at first. You obviously have the target on your back.
Yeah.
You know, you're the guy dating the boss's daughter.
Yeah.
That definitely happened. It just takes time to just, you have to prove yourself. And I felt like, I have a close friend of mine who's actually our operations manager here at WITTECH, and he was in a similar situation most of his life too. You almost have to prove yourself more to people. Mm-hmm. And I kind of appreciated it. You know, you had to just try harder to gain people's respect. And that just motivated me, you know, to just do better. You know, if I could gain people's respect and trust, knowing that I'm dating the boss's daughter, then I kind of felt like I was doing my part, you know? Yeah. So yeah, it's, of course, the beginning was rough. You know, you got the comments, you know, it was definitely there, but, it just motivated me more to try to thrive. We had great guys at that time that were still like, they give you a hard time, but they would definitely still be there and help me, you know, teach me, even knowing the situation. So,
well, it makes you an easy target. I feel like people look for things to somewhat discredit people. So, you know, as you're moving up, especially, it's like, well, of course he's moving up. He's you know, married to the guy's daughter. Like, yeah, why wouldn't he be moving up? But in reality, you know, you'd been busting your ass for a decade, you know, longer than that now, and gone through the ranks of, you know, trying out college wasn't for you. Then you went to laborers union. Then you went to operators union. Then you moved in the office. I mean, you've done your time just like anyone else would. There's really no, there's no exceptional treatment there, it seems like.
No, there wasn't. There wasn't.
Yeah.
So like I said, it just makes you, people are always going to have an opinion, and you can decide for yourself what you're going to do with that. You know, you can either crawl in a ball and give up, or, you know, you could just go to work every day and keep working hard.
And that's, you know, like I grew up pretty well off. And so I was always afraid of talking about it because I didn't want people to use it to just discredit me, especially when I started out as a laborer when I was 18, right out of high school. I was super careful about, I pretty much hid where I lived and everything about my life from everyone I worked with for the first few years of working in the industry, because I was so afraid that they would not view me like them and it would put me behind. Now I'm pretty open about it because it's just reality. It's just how I grew up. But early on, I was super careful about talking about it and instead just proving myself and showing my worth based on my work and how much I'd put in every single day at work rather than where I was from or who I was or anything like that.
Yeah. Well, and I think it makes you're better for it. You know, you see there's sometimes maybe something to be said about somebody coming in from the outside. You know, maybe you weren't born and raised in the environment. It's maybe why generations of family businesses don't succeed.
Yeah.
Your kids just either were burned out because dad was always gone or mom was always gone, or that was just life and you grew up with it and it was just normal and it didn't interest you. It doesn't get you fired up. So you don't do anything with it. You know, for me, I was just blown away at the industry itself and so interested in it that I wanted to get involved with it, wanted to do something with, you know, a business, you know, an opportunity that was in front of me.
Yep.
And I was given all those opportunities. So, I mean, at the end of the day, you need opportunity as a person.
Yep.
You know, everybody needs opportunity. But it's what you do with that opportunity when you got to be able to see it. You got to be able to go with it, you know.
With going back to college real quick, at what point in time did you decide, all right, you know, I've tried this and it's not really going to serve me past what I've already done? Like, how did you come to that decision of, I don't think I'm going to finish this, I'm just going to go work?
So when I was in, when I graduated high school, it was 2007. And I want to say when we started to see some economic downturn was not too much longer after that. 2000, it might've been a little bit later. So 2008, 2009 in college, I was seeing friends ahead of me, you know, maybe freshman, senior in college. They get out of college with their degrees and there's nothing there for them. You know, there wasn't opportunity.
Yeah.
You know, it was a downed economy. There what people were hiring, but it was very scarce, you know? And, for me, I had this opportunity already with WITTECH, this family business. And I'm sitting in a classroom, you know, doing a general elective because I had finished all my, majority of my core classes, engineering and construction management classes early on. So then I just had these general electives and these totally irrelevant subjects. And maybe some people will disagree with me on that, but I saw the opportunity that I had and I wasn't really interested in putting any more effort into school. And I wanted to start putting all my effort into learning the business, you know, and growing in the business.
Yep.
So that's why I moved on, you know.
Well, it's interesting. Even the economy's good right now, but I've seen from personal experience, a lot of my friends, they went and got these degrees, and even when the economy's good, even when there's a lot of jobs, record low unemployment, or there was a few years ago before everything this year happened, the jobs that they were getting were totally different than their degrees. So they go out, they get this degree, they try to find a job in that field. That job doesn't really exist. So then they end up in whatever other jobs available. That's totally irrelevant to what they just studied for 4 years. So they're not really using the degree to get the job. It's because the jobs don't even exist a lot of times for these degrees that they're getting. So even in a good economy, that situation still exists, that these kids are not they're not any more prepared for a particular career than they were before, other than just being more well-rounded as a human being, maybe more socially equipped, maybe more have greater abilities to make decisions. But as far as preparation and technical ability for a career, I don't see it very much, even when things are good.
No, and they're probably not passionate about it either.
Yeah.
You know, whatever they went into. The biggest thing that I could see for me, with other people or with hiring people here or wherever you're looking, you have to be passionate about the work you're doing.
Yeah.
You do it your whole life, you know, and to not be passionate about what you're putting all your energy into most of your day, you know, I don't know. I wouldn't want to do that. So.
Well, and there's careers you can get away with not being passionate and still do just fine.
Sure.
I mean, you're not going to enjoy it. It's going to be kind of a miserable 40 plus years, but you can get away with it. Whereas in the blue collar world, in construction, you can't really get away with it. I mean, you really do have to have the bug for it, because there's a lot of days where it sucks and the work is really hard and the conditions are miserable and the problems seem insurmountable. And if you don't have that bug, if you're not really there for something beyond the money, you just look at it, you're like, well, why am I even doing this? You have to be bought into this industry to be successful long-term in it. I'm a firm believer in that. Whereas a lot of other industries, I don't think that's the case.
No, that's 100% correct. We talk about that here all the time. The industry will wear you out. And if you don't have a passion for it, if you don't want to be a part of it, you won't. It'll kick you right out.
Yep.
The hours are long. The stress levels are high. The environment, like you said, we're in Chicago. We're 40 minutes south of the city, and the weather is whatever. It's hot. It's cold. It's snowing. It's raining. It's never really just nice around here.
Yeah.
So it's just you have to want to be a part of. You're away from your family a lot. you know, some of our guys, you know, they could live in, I don't, you name it, and they have to travel an hour, hour and a half, sometimes 2 hours to the job site. And then they go and they put in a 10-hour day, sometimes a 12-hour day, and then they turn around and drive home. I mean, add that up. It's not a lot of family time. So yeah, it's a tough industry, but you know, it's super rewarding too. I mean, you talk to these dudes, old timers, Ashley's, my wife's grandpa, and even my father-in-law, you know, just to, you get the guys, these guys driving down the road, and we did that job. You know, oh, I remember when we did that job, there was a pond in that job that the ground was just total muck, and you know, we got this stuck, and just hearing the stories, you know, and then what was the solution, you know, what they did. And there's always something, you know, always, you know, so-and-so did it this way, and then he broke that, and then, yeah, and on it goes, you know, but you could see still when they're that age, the passion's still there, you know, and there's a sense of pride and, you know, hey, we got that job done, you know, and look at it now, you know, so. Yeah. So the answer to circle back on everything, you have to, in this industry, you have to want to be a part of it. It's not just something where it's like, well, I'll just do it because my dad did it, my mom did it. You know, it eventually it'll wear you out.
Well, and to circle back even further, why companies in this industry don't often succeed with multiple generations is that even though you grew up in the business, you're not necessarily in love with the business. So the expectation is that you're the son a lot of times of the guy, and you are going to be in charge of the business. But what happens when you're not all that excited about it? What happens if you wanted to go pursue something else? You're just naturally you're naturally supposed to go pursue another path. It's like the nature versus nurture. You can be nurtured in a construction background, but maybe it's just not in your nature. And yet when you try to force that round peg into a square hole, it's not going to succeed a lot of times. I think that's really the biggest reason why some of these businesses don't succeed is that the former generation just expects their offspring to go to love it as much as they do because they were born into it. And a lot of times it's just not that way generation to generation.
No, that's 100%. And Tom will say that a lot too. Yeah. You know, and I have to remember that, you know, I have four kids, you know, three boys, one girl, you know, and at the end of the day, you need to look out for the people that, your employees that are here, your employees that are putting in the time, the effort, and have helped you build something. You know, all the credit to what Wittek has done, and 2020 has been the best year that Wittek's ever had, ever. And all that credit is to everybody, all of our people, you know, from the top on down.
Yep.
And the last thing you want to do as a business owner is start bringing people, kids, you know, your children into a business if they're not passionate about it. So there definitely has to be that thought process in a business owner's head of, do I think they're passionate enough, you know, or do I have people here that are more passionate? You know, there's a definite conversation, multiple conversations that should be had to just make sure it's what you're, you know, it's what that next generation really, really wants, you know, and if they do, great, run with it. But if they don't, you know, you need to, it's not the end all be all, you know, start looking at your other options. You know, you have these great people within your organization that have helped you your whole journey. There's lots of options there. And you look at people who are employee owned, you know, there's all kinds of things you can do. So yeah. I think having an open mind on, you know, being open-minded as you move from generation to generation is key.
Well, I'm young, but I still think about this, and I don't have children. I don't even have a woman that I'm looking at being like, yep, I could marry that woman. So I am way, way, way off. But I think, And maybe this will change, but I don't want my kids involved in the business. I mean, if they, and I'm going to have this business, I don't really have an exit strategy. This is what I'm confident I'll be doing the next 40 years. So I can at least say that if they want to be in the business, they can go apply for a job. I'm not going to say, no, you can't be in the business. But at the same time, I'm really going to shy away from getting them involved in the company at the same time, because I just want them to do what they are supposed to do. And if they are supposed to do what we're doing, then that's awesome. There'll be a path for them and they can go apply and just like anyone else can go work their ass off and succeed. But otherwise, I want to stay away from it as much as possible, because it works real great a lot of times. But I've seen a lot of other times where it just gets ugly and it doesn't work out. With your father-in-law, did he have any children? I know your wife, you know, daughter. Were there any other kids involved in the business at all, or was there really no succession plan there?
No, none of the other. My wife has two other siblings, and just really never showed that much interest in the company.
Yeah.
At that point in time. But no, it's tough. But you know, I'm grateful for kind of being the son-in-law and having to. You're more or less forced to then work your way up.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
As if you're the son, and in some businesses, and not to give myself any pat on the back, it's not what I'm about at all. But it's just I've learned that if I can do the same thing or that Tom did, hey, you need to start here. This is where you need to start. Down there, picking rocks out of a bin, or loading a landscape truck, or shoveling stone on the job site, or checking grade. Or greasing, doing oil changes, what have you, fixing hoses. That's where I truly believe you need to start, and work your way up, so that way you understand every aspect to a degree. There's always going to be somebody else in your business that's going to hopefully do that better than you. You want to strive for that. But at least you understand the different facets of the business, so you can relate to your people, when you get into the position of management.
Agreed.
If you can't relate to somebody, if you've never had that experience in the field of, you know what kind of sucks to do. You know what things would be like when you ask somebody as a manager to do something. You know if that's already going to be a pain, or if you have that experience already. And you'll have that respect from employees if they know you were there. You've been there. You've done that. So I would I'm encouraged, to with my kids, or even our we talk a lot about, we have our employees. Their kids are starting to come into the family, into this company, into this business.
Yep.
But it's really important just to get those grassroots, form a foundation, get into it, get dirty, understand what it takes, and then move from there. Know if that's going to let you know if you're passionate about it or not when you're at the bottom.
Well, and actually doing it too, it just gives you a form of self-confidence that you can't artificially create or buy or anything like that. Like if I were to say, yeah, Nick, you don't know what you're doing. Like you're just, you just got this because, you just got lucky. It's like me saying that to you, you wouldn't even have to defend yourself, because you just know, like, no, I've done it. And I have this confidence that's rooted in, no, I've been at the bottom, and I've put in my time, and that allows you to make higher level decisions. That allows you to, if someone does try to come after you, you can just pretty easily dismiss it without getting in your head about it. It brings a peace to everything and to the disorder later on, when you know that you've done it, you can do it, and you know what it takes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. You're not necessarily an ace. You're not that ace dozer guy. You're not that ace excavator guy.
No.
That's what you're hiring for.
Yep.
If you were good at it, if you were the best at everything, who would you need? And you can't do it all yourself. It's just, yeah.
Well, going from that, we just had our little company meeting here last week. And so I went to our friends at Thompson Machinery, the Cat dealer in Middle Tennessee here, and asked if we could rent a few pieces of equipment from them, because most of our company, a lot of these folks are marketing folks, because we've realized we needed a lot of skill sets outside of construction, obviously, to do what we do. A lot of them have never been in a piece of equipment. So they're telling the stories of all these people that run equipment and are in this industry every single day without having experienced it themselves. And it was, it was funny for me. I thought it would really just be, you know, they'd just have fun and this and that, but it really, it was amazing how much they got out of just running a skid steer for 15 minutes. It was this whole new level of understanding, like, whoa, this is way different than I imagine it being. And they have this whole new level of respect for the people that they're telling stories of with just such a small experience and doing what they do every day. Allows them to tell the story a lot better. So it was really cool to see how it shifted everyone's perspective so quickly when they actually stepped into these people's shoes and did their role for even just a few minutes.
Now, I will say, sidebar to this, I enjoyed the Instagram stories.
It was so much fun
that day. That's pretty awesome.
Usually I'm the one that likes to be in the equipment, but that day I just liked watching everyone and try to run these pieces of equipment for the first time, because it's hilarious, if nothing else.
I couldn't agree with you more.
Explain your father-in-law. How, you know, what's he like? What's his vision like? What's his work ethic like? What's his personality like? What is he like?
Yeah, Tom is one of the easiest people to work with, work for. He's humble. He's a man of faith. You know, we could touch base on that more. But the man of faith, and he cares about, you know, being respectful. He cares about that, working hard. He cares about being a man of his word. He's just integrity. You'd never hear it come out of him. He's the least prideful person I think I know.
Yeah.
He gives all the credit to the people here. You know, it's never him. You know, it's the team, it's the people. He gives credit to God, you know, for blessing our company with, you know, what we have, you know, what we've been given. You know, he's a good steward of the money, you know, of money, of profits, the year end, you know, give back. You know, we have missions that we support, and schools we support, all kinds of different things, jails, all kinds of things. And he's just been a great mentor to me, just in that regard, of just all those things I just stated. He's been willing to let me in, you know. Yeah. He's been willing to let me kind of just release the reins, you know, so to speak.
Yep.
We laugh about it now a lot, you know, because we're polar opposite people in some regards, and then in other ways we're not. He's a lot more laid back and chill, where I'm still feisty, I guess. But he had the, you know, he was able, I give him a lot of respect for being able to take something that he started and that he created and be able to let that go and let somebody else, and not even his own son, you know, come in and change course, you know, change some direction in some regard, do things differently. Okay. He'll tell you he's a yellow notepad and pencil kind of guy. So that's how we estimated, you know, that's how we used to do everything. And now we do everything electronically, you know, using digital takeoff, you know, ag tech software, CAD files, HCSS for bidding, and then GPS technology out in the field. So, but yeah, just a lot of respect for him to be able to kind of just open up his business to me and allow me to, you know, be a part of it and kind of take it from where he brought it to, you know?
And it speaks a lot to his humility to do that, because you do really have to be extremely humble to just be able to step back and let other people learn and let other people create and let other people do with what you created and not have to step in every step of the way. And you can just, I don't know, your business, your guys' business overall is just really, the humility from him goes all the way down to the bottom, because everyone at the company, like you guys are, I was super, and I'm not just saying this, and I've texted you about this a few times after we visited the last site. The last site we went to, huge earth moving project. I mean, hundreds of thousands of yards of material. You guys are moving 15 to 25,000 yards a day on like a big industrial, like a commercial kind of like a warehouse size job. This isn't like mining, for example. So that that yardage is a feat in itself, especially with the size of equipment you guys had. You had nothing more than a 50 ton excavator out there. You guys were so damn good, and it was such a well-oiled machine. One of the finest operations I had seen. It was just such a treat being out there, even down to the truck drivers, how they knew which excavator to go to whenever. So no one was waiting. They knew that the dozer didn't really have to babysit these guys dumping up to where the fill was. The excavator operators were in this enormous cut that would have been a total challenge for most everyone. That they were side loading at the same level. The excavator was side loading these trucks, and yet they were still banging these things out like it was no problem whatsoever. Everything about it was flawless, and yet you can just tell it's not really like we're really damn good at what we do. Like, yeah, we're WITEC. Like, yeah, let's bump chests. Like, it's none of that at all. You guys are just doing what you do.
Yeah. No,
I don't know how to describe it better. It's just, yeah, it's like this overwhelming sense of humility down to the grade checkers out there.
Yeah, and I thank you for all the compliments. But it stems from the top. You know, you learn from the top, and that comes from Tom. You know, and that's how I'd like to continue to run the business. You know, as I've moved in, you know, I've learned from the best, to be honest. You know, quite frank. You know, I don't think I'd want to learn from anybody different. And his dad was the same way. You know, grandpa was the same way. A little bit different personalities. You know, they operated a little bit differently, but the end result though was still, you know, be a humble servant. You know, to your employees, to your clients, to God. You know, that those are characteristics that he cares about, traits he shows every day, and I would be thrilled if I could mimic half of it.
Yeah. Now let's go into the role your guys' faith brings into how you operate the business, how you own the business, because it carries a heavy weight, and I feel like it's a big piece of a lot of businesses in the industry, and yet it's one of those topics that is very rarely discussed, which I've always thought is fascinating. What's the role you guys play in the business? And starting from day one, working with you guys and talking with Tom, I really like how open he is about how the business really isn't his. He's just it's just been given to him. He's the caretaker of it. And he's, you know, kind of just being a faithful steward of what he's been given to give back to everyone in the community, all the families he supports and everything like that. Can you just explain how you view faith and how it plays a role in the business?
Absolutely. So faith here at WITEC is for the managers. You know, the owners of the company is the center. You know, it is the most important thing that we have going on in our lives. So, you know, we want to be, like you had said, you know, we want to be good stewards of what the Lord's given, you know, and by doing that, you know, we're being faithful. It's everything we do, you know, as business owners is to, you know, we do it to glorify God. So, you know, having that mindset and that base of that foundation, everything else kind of just stems from that. You know, that helps you, you know, demonstrate running your business on ethical, you know, biblical, moral standards, you know, with finances, you know, with what you're paying people, you know, are you paying people on time? Are you holding money out too long? You know, you're playing games maybe you shouldn't be. It's part of our motto too, you know, building with purpose, you know, moving dirt with purpose. For me personally, for Tom, you know, Darren, and other people too, but you need to have purpose in your life, you know, and that purpose can be anything. But if you don't have a purpose for why you're doing something, it kind of goes back to everything we talked about earlier on the call. You know, if you're just doing it without any purpose at all, it's going to show, you know, it's going to show. So for me, you know, my purpose is what we're talking about here. You know, my purpose here on this earth is to glorify God with the work we're doing here at WITEC. So
what does glorify God mean to you? I mean, what does that even mean?
It's just without preaching to you, yeah, I definitely don't want to get into, but no, it's just, it's everything for us here as a Christian family. You know, glorifying God is just basically giving thanks to Him for everything He's done for us. Mm. You know, and we as sinners, you know, on this earth, you know, we can't do anything on our own apart from God.
Yep.
So, you know, we have to we rely on Him. You know, you rely on Him for everything. So, and He's blessed this company greatly. It's unbelievable, to be honest with you. So, and it helps us with just as a business, you know, you don't cut corners, you know, it helps. You produce quality work each and every day. You say you're going to do something, you do it. Mm-hmm. You know, there is no going back on your word.
Yep.
Those are all kind of biblical principles, but I think anybody can get behind those, Christian or non-Christian, you know. It's important though. It's important to have some purpose in your life, I guess, is how I'd like to leave that, is sure that you're going to work with some kind of purpose, whether it be for your family, you know, it could be a multitude of things, you know, you're going to work for your family, for your kids, for your spouse, for your own personal goal. I don't know, trying to think of more things. I'm sure there's more, but
yeah. It is amazing. It is amazing though how many people do live without that higher purpose, or do business without that higher purpose, whatever it may be. It's there's a million different things that purpose could be, but there's so many businesses out there and just people in general that don't really think about, all right, why am I actually doing this? Like, what's the point? What do I want to really accomplish with my life? Why am I here? Why? Just asking that why, what's the bigger picture here? What, I mean, this might be a ridiculous question, but do you think WITTECH would be where it is without your guys' faith if you removed that from the equation?
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
No, we wouldn't. No, no, no. That's the easiest question you gave me today.
Yeah, I had to give you one softball. No, I knew that was the answer, but it's fascinating to think about how impactful it can be.
Yeah.
Now, before the call, we talked a little bit about, you know, why you guys are, you know, just thoughtful about how you guys talk about your faith in a public forum as a business. And I feel like a lot of business owners, a lot of people in general right now, they're very religious. They're very faith driven. That's really their core purpose. And yet they don't talk about it publicly for what I think is kind of the same reason why you guys are careful with talking about it publicly. What's the reasoning behind just being cautious and thoughtful about how you guys approach religion as a business publicly with all your people? What's the thought process there?
You know, you personally can make any decision you want for yourself. You know, you're in charge of yourself. You know, as Christians want to kind of show you our faith, you know, by the way we maybe interact, you know, the way we talk to people, the way we run our business, and then maybe bring up the question, you know, to people, you know, to question, why do you do this way? Or why didn't you do that? You know, and then that kind of sets up the opportunity to be able to then share why. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of how we go about it. So kind of showing by example, you know, and then have somebody ask you the question,
yeah,
you know, why, and then that sets up the conversation to talk about faith and mm-hmm. to do it in an environment that's not hostile. It's not kind of like in your face.
Yep.
You know, we absolutely do not do that. You know, there's a line there in business, you know? And, so that's kind of how we navigate that.
Gotcha. This is a principle that extends well beyond religion, but it is interesting living in a way that you shouldn't really need to tell everyone that you believe in this set of values or you're a Christian or anything like that. They should just know based on how you live your life, your actions, how you speak, how you take care of people. All the actions should point to exactly what you believe in, what your value system is, without you really having to say what it is.
Sure, absolutely. I mean, do we get it right all the time? Heck no.
Yes.
You know, I mean, are we just as sinful as the next person, that the person standing next to us? Sure.
Correct.
You know, absolutely. You know, so that too, you know, that we're not perfect, and we're just striving to do the best we can with what we've been given. That's the bottom line.
Yeah. And the understanding, and this goes back to religion, but it also doesn't, just the understanding that humans by definition are flawed, and we're just all flawed. There's no such thing as a perfect human being. Once you start to understand that, you can start to just apply grace to others and just sit there and say, you know, hey, maybe they were doing their best. They really screwed up here. They really even hurt me or hurt other folks, but they're flawed just like I am. So why am I sitting here judging them for what they did when I know that I'm not perfect and I've made a lot of mistakes and I don't want people judging me for those. It's just amazing how quick people are to judge when they are oftentimes in the same boat with the people that they're judging.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, I just want to touch on that because I think it's fascinating and I'm trying to learn about, you know, what I believe in and why. So I like talking to other people about what they believe in. Now, the business overall, let's get back to dirt. As far as what you are doing to modernize the business, you said your father-in-law, Tom, definitely old school, definitely, you know, that last generation of earth movers. What are you doing to modernize the business? What do you think needs to change in our industry to ensure that, what do you think your business needs to do to change and adapt to ensure that WITTECH is around for the next few decades?
Great question. And I think we're always modifying it, to be honest with you. I think that plan, that's an ever changing revolving door. You know, you're always modifying and editing, but staying on top of, you know, technology, the latest and greatest. Mm-hmm. It's always hard to like try new things, you know, and we're trying to get into drones more, which I know several earthwork companies just in our area have been doing drones for years now.
Yep.
You know, we're just starting to break into it. So I think we're behind the eight ball on some things. I think on other things we're doing, you know, we're right there with the latest. But I think the biggest thing is just to be open to change. Be open to if an employee comes, we always kind of leave the door open to an employee for an idea, you know, and hear it out. Hear the employee out, hear that manager out, you know, on, hey, what if we do this? Or what if we try this a little differently? You know, we're open to that. I think you have to be, you know, our people here are better than we are as far as, you know, I like to think we hire the best and we train the best, you know, and so that getting their opinion is important. So that's one thing on the, you know, technology side of things. The other thing we're trying to just stay up on the latest and greatest earth moving equipment.
Yeah.
You know, we do a lot with mobile track. And we do a lot with deer, cat, and, you know, just staying on top of what's the latest they got cooking. We tried out some prototypes this year, prototype machines. Sometimes they break, you know, but other times they work out for the best. So I think being open to try out, you know, a vendor's latest and greatest dozer, latest and greatest scraper, pole pan, something simple like a roller blade, you know, a disc. You know, if it does it better, you know, if there's a potential for it to do it better, more efficient, more cost effective, what have you, easier to work on for the mechanics, you know, try it out, see how it goes. And we've been really open to that. And I can tell you for sure we've benefited from it.
Yep.
So you've seen some of the prototype machines we've ran this year. And, you know, we've shared a little bit about the pros and cons. But I think I think some of the stuff that we're trying out, we're potentially, you know, working on with vendors is positive stuff that could change up our dirt world here.
Well, it's so funny how resistant to change people are in this industry for no real reason, for no good reason. Like the prototypes you're talking about, I've shared one of them from Mobile Track on my social media. And it's just amazing how quickly people are to dismiss it as the stupidest thing they've ever seen in their life and explain why it's never going to work, even though they've never seen it in person. They have no understanding of it. they have no understanding of what the particular applications are. They're just saying, well, that's not going to work with what I do. It's like, okay, great. Yeah, maybe it's not going to work with what you do, but what you do is not what everyone else does. It's dirt in Chicago might be completely different than dirt in California, you dummy. And it's representative of a lot of the industry. People are just so quick to, well, that's stupid. And the companies that reverse that trend and are saying, you know, hey, maybe there is a better machine for this, or maybe there is a better way to do it, are going to just trounce these older school mentality companies, I think, long term.
Yeah. No, we've been able to be more efficient and lower unit costs to the customer based on the technology we're using.
Yeah.
And with all that, you win more work. You know, guys wonder, you know, hey, they're doing that job for nothing. You know, there they are again, doing it for nothing. Well, are we? Or are we just trying to figure out a way to, have we found a way to do it more efficiently than we did it last year?
Yep.
You know, and that's the mentality we are trying to keep, and it's working well. It's paid off, and we're open to more. Sometimes the biggest problem is having the time to sit down with somebody and hear them. You know, we get a lot of people, you know, a lot of vendors, and you know, hey, I got this. You want to try this? And you know, you wish you could say yes to everything, you know, because there's a lot. If you can spend an hour, you know, just to check out the latest and greatest stuff, there is a lot of neat stuff out there. So yeah, be open to it. That's my advice. Try it out.
Well, fortunately you tried us out a little bit ago now.
Yeah.
Going to just the scale of what you guys do in the Chicago market, why is there so much dirt to move in Chicago? Because it's not very hilly. It's pretty flat. You know, so you're not like in California, you're not just like leveling these mountains or anything like that. Yet you guys are on some of these jobs moving, you know, millions of yards of material in the middle of the city. What's the nature of the earthwork in the Midwest in the Chicago market that requires so much earth moving?
Good question. I want on a side note, faithfully moving mountains was a tagline for us at the beginning of our build with conversation. And Tom and I still battle with that one because they said there's no mountains in the Chicagoland area, so yeah. We can't have that. We still go back and forth about that one.
Yep.
He says, well, we move enough dirt to move a mountain. But, yep. Okay, whatever. But no, what's thriving here for us is the kind of that e-commerce logistics distribution world. And then everything kind of stems then from there. So then the distribution, these large building pads, these massive parking lots for truck trailer storage, these huge earthwork jobs. That's where we're getting our yardage out of. These, even you would look at something as a cornfield and it's flat to begin with. You know, some of these pads we're building for some of these buildings span over 1.4 million square foot.
Wow.
And that's one floor. And, you know, and then you have the associated parking for that, drainage, you know, for stormwater runoff. So the yardage creeps up pretty fast with projects that size. And then in result of that, you know, we get quarry work, overburden removal work, just because of these mass quantities of aggregate for these buildings. You know, we put all the rock down underneath the slabs on grade for these building pads, the concrete pavement areas, sometimes for the paver under the asphalt pavement. So yeah, that's what's kind of driving it here in the Midwest. I would say right now the most, that's probably a good 70% of our work is in the distribution, e-commerce, commercial, industrial sector. And then over in Northwest Indiana is the housing, you know, just another housing boom.
Yep.
You know, we do just a ton of site prep for, you know, roads and house pads, ponds for the residential market. So, and the yardage just creeps up on those too. They're just large. We did a 300 home site this past year. We did a few other ones, not quite as large, but the yardage adds up pretty quick out there too.
But why, like on this big, like a million square foot warehouse pad, for example, why can't I just, if it's already flat, if it's already this cornfield, why can't I just build my warehouse on this pad? Why do I have to go move hundreds of thousands of yards of dirt to make it happen?
Well, you got to get it to drain. So the drainage is, you know, drainage.
Mm.
So this should be in every dirt guy's head. But yeah. The these pads are flat. You could just go put it out, you know, set it right out there, but then everything around it would be a hole. You know, mm-hmm. your loading docks are usually 4 foot lower for all of the trucks to be able to back into these buildings to get loaded and offloaded. So your grade around the entire building is automatically going to be 4 foot lower.
Gotcha.
You know, at least on your dock sides.
Yep.
And then you got all your storm water from your roof. You know, your roof has to get down into your pavement line. Your pavement lines are taking your storm water runoff into your ponds. So everything's got to, you know, everything's gravity, right? So if you're starting flat, you don't really have anywhere to go, and you're not going to pump it out of the job site. So typically when you see something that's flat, it has to get raised. So you got to pull it up out of the ground.
Gotcha.
You know, you got it. So that way you're at your lowest point, you're out for your water. It's kind of like your starting point. So where's water going out at? Where will water naturally leave this 150 acre development naturally, you know, without, yeah, okay. Could you have a pump system set up to where you're actually, you know, lift station, you're pumping your stormwater out? I've seen mm-hmm. projects that does happen. Not ideal, but typically the reason for all this earthwork is because you're starting flat and you need to make, you know, you have this huge area of water runoff from roof and pavement that you have to construct these massive basins. And then you have to, where's that out? That out's important, where that water's gotta leave at the end of the job.
Makes perfect sense. Can you get into the job you guys did with all the trash? Like, what are some of these sites like closer to Chicago? These sites that have never been developed before that are now being developed, because that means they were previously so unsuitable, no one's wanted to touch them until recently, where, you know, land started to run out. So then they need to get into these sites that are kind of a mess. What are some of these sites like? You know, not all of them are these beautiful farm fields like the one we just went to. Some of them are pretty messed up. What's the kind of stuff you have to deal with?
Yeah. So that's kind of how we got into this sector. We went after the projects that nobody else wanted to do. So you get these projects that are just in the outlying areas of the city, you know, the west side, southwest side, south sides of the city, where there may have been there may be three or four buildings, smaller buildings there at one time, and they've been bought, demoed, and now you're doing a site redevelopment. So it's a specialty of ours. We don't run away from those jobs. The job with all the unsuitable material on, you know, that project was part old subdivision that never took off.
Mm.
So that was old streets, curb and gutter, gas, water main that was leaking all over the place, sanitary lines, force mains, old communication cables, there's telephone poles everywhere. And then the other half of the job was an IEPA environmentally, you know, I wouldn't call it the bad stuff, but it was, there was some questionable material, hazardous material on the project.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to be really careful on those kinds of sites that, you know, sometimes you have to almost treat like two separate jobs, so to speak. All the material on that, in that one spot, has to remain in that one spot, or it has to get hauled away and go to a certified disposal dump, you know? So the coordination in those jobs to, okay, well, yeah, we have this I think that site was about 125 acres. So we have this 125 acre site, 40 acres of it is its own project. And the rest of it, we can, you know, kind of logistically set up the earthwork to work like a normal project. But the other one, you know, this other one, we have to have a different game plan. A lot of these jobs require environmental caps, environmental barriers.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to put like a fabric down. That would be in like your green space. Put a fabric down, geotextile fabric. And then we import a lot of topsoil, you know, certified, clean, pretty stringent requirements by the IEPA for these sites that may have been hazardous at one time that we've cleaned up.
Yep.
So we'll haul topsoil, honestly, from our developments, cornfield developments. You know, we might have a large stockpile of topsoil from a residential development. We don't need all of it for individual lot respread. So we'll take topsoil from those projects further south of the city, and we'll run that topsoil up into the city to, you know, respread these. Because these jobs in the city are just as big as these jobs in the cornfield.
Yep.
So you can imagine the amount of topsoil you'd have to import to jobs like this because there's really, you'll start at a job that doesn't have an ounce of green space on it anywhere. So, but you're going to create green space with this new development. So you have to, all this material's trucked in. So yeah, it's a different world. The soil is always variable up there. One job, and we did just in the south side of the city, had a lot of cinder material, mainly from maybe the fire. But you know, that stuff's, it's different, but you work in it rain or shine, you know, it actually works pretty well. You can run 740s on it pretty easily. It doesn't pump like clay, you know, so that there's money to be made in those redevelopment sites. They're difficult, but if you're up for the challenge, they're pretty neat.
Yeah, the different amounts of soil that you guys have to deal with is pretty incredible. Like that one site with all that cinder material on it, or that next site with trash all over it, or the next site with rock that you guys are drilling and shooting in Chicago, which is just crazy. Or you go to a farm field and you have these nice clays buried underneath all this muck. It seems like every single job you guys have is completely different soil conditions than the last, which I have not seen too many regions like that. Most everywhere is pretty consistent across the board, whereas you guys are just dealing with all sorts of crazy stuff.
Well, and that's why I think it's important to be open to options that vendors have, equipment dealers have.
Yeah.
You know, because they're looking at the same things you're looking at, you know, they're coming up with solutions for you. You know, it's all just, that's why we try to, you know, we had a quad track, prototype quad track that we had a really swampy area in a basin we were trying to, it was a compensatory storage basin. It was probably like a 20 acre basin. And we couldn't really get a wide track LGP dozer down in this thing without making a mess, you know, rutting it up, pumping. And we drove a quad track prototype tractor down into the swamp with a 33 yard pan, got a load and pulled out of it.
Wild.
And, so yeah, I mean, it just goes to show you, you know, you just try stuff, see what happens. Do we break a lot of stuff? Oh yeah. But you know, it's worth a shot.
That's what you're supposed to do though. If you're not breaking stuff, you're not using it to its fullest potential there.
Yeah. Yeah. Vendors don't always appreciate it, but no. You know, we'll definitely find out if it works or not for you.
Yeah, but the vendors and the equipment companies and the engineers that think that contractors are going to use it, their equipment, to what they're recommending, they're complete idiots. I've never met one single contractor or serious earth mover that actually uses the equipment to exactly what the specifications are. They're always there to just push the limits wherever they possibly can. And I think they find joy in pushing the limits on equipment to just see like, yeah, we got this machine to break when they said it wouldn't break. Like they're stoked about it because their job site was that rough.
Yeah.
It cracks me up.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, or like your trucks, for example, like I like how you guys do it where, you know, you just load the trucks to as much as they possibly can carry. If they break, you fix them. Like there's more money in just hauling as much material as possible than trying to protect your truck from failure, which there's multiple ways to go about that. But I like the mentality of, you know, it's there to use. If it fits in the box, put it in there. And if it breaks, you repair it and you put it back. Like that's what a truck is for. It's not here to just baby and make sure, oh no, we don't have the right tonnage in this one. It's just like, just load the damn thing up and send it down the road.
Yeah, no. And if you notice too, I'm sure you saw, we run a lot of old trucks.
Yep.
We run like the old B1P serial number Cat 740s,
yep,
with the A model truck. And there's less restrictions in them. They're more powerful. We've had better luck with them. So a lot of some of our trucks have 20,000 hours on them, you know, and some of them have had stress cracks in the frames, you know, where we've had to put plates on them and put some investment back into the units. But for the most part on these larger Caterpillar pieces, you know, we just rebuild them. They're made to last. And, you know, yeah, you have all your maintenance stuff and things are going to break. And yes, do older machines break more than newer machines? Sure. But we've had great luck with some of our older stuff and just rebuilding it, keep running it. And you see what we do. I mean, you've said it here and we load the snot out of the stuff and we work our equipment, you know, but it takes it. It's proven, you know, we do it every day. We can attest for it. So,
yep. Well, it's a lot of fun to see. So I'm excited to come back out in the spring when you guys are full bore again.
Yeah, no, we're looking forward to it.
Sweet. Anything you want to touch on? I guess, as far as hiring goes, you guys are a union shop. So is it Operators Union? Is it 150 up there?
Yeah. Local 150 is the Operators Union in our area.
Yep.
And then we have, a Laborers Union. There's several numbers for the Chicagoland, Northwest Indiana area, but yeah, we're a union shop. So, you know, we hire out of local union halls for the operators. So it's a little bit different than other parts of the U.S. But we get qualified operators, qualified laborers. They run through apprenticeship programs through the unions. When they first get into the union, they have to go through a apprenticeship program, which kind of starts laying the groundwork for the tools of the trade. And while they're in the apprenticeship, they're also working for somebody. So it gives them the experience in the field, but also the experience at a training site.
Yep.
To, you know, get acclimated with whatever piece of equipment, whether, you know, the haul truck or scraper, disc, quad track, whatever, backhoe. You know, it gives them that experience both ways. So we're it works well for us. You know, we like to think that all of our people are people, you know, and we treat people like we hired them direct, you know, but unions sometimes get a bad rap, but, you know, we've got a great relationship with all of our local unions in this area, and we have great people, and they're all union employees, and they show up to work every day. They work hard, you know, they work safe, something we really haven't touched on, but that's something I can't thank our people enough for, is the amount of work we got done this year. And I stated earlier that this has been our best year as a company since 2001 when we started. This has been our best year ever. And we've worked a lot of hours, almost, I don't know if it's triple the hours. It's at least double the man hours of last year. And all the guys, all of our people, everybody's done a fantastic job of being safe and then watching out for one another.
On going to that, you guys didn't recently, you won an award with Ryan Companies?
We did. Yeah. I was honored to receive, that was our first award for safety, as a company. Yeah. It was great. We had several large projects with Ryan Companies, US. They're a large, developer throughout the country. And, we received their safety award. So yeah, it was pretty awesome to receive it. Pretty humbling. And, yeah, just hats off to our whole team for getting it done, for getting the award.
Pretty cool. And if people want to learn more about you guys, I think the website is wittechexcavating.com, and that's
wittechcompany.com.
wittechcompany.com?
That's correct.
All right. See, I don't even know you guys' URL. I probably should know that. So wittechcompany.com, and it's WITECH.
Yep.
Gotcha.
You got it.
Sweet. Okay, Mr. Nick. Well, with that, I think we're going to wrap this thing up.
Awesome. Well, hey, appreciate you having me on. Appreciate the work that you guys, your whole team, the whole Build What team's doing for WITTECH. It's been an awesome ride so far, and excited to keep it going.
All right. Yeah, let's keep it going. I'm excited. And, it's just been awesome seeing you guys grow this year, and I can't wait for the next few years here. So I appreciate your time today, and that's another episode of Dirt Talk. So hopefully you learned something, and keep on sharing it. It's been awesome. Again, Spotify came out with their year in review this week. If you haven't noticed, if you're on social media, you've definitely noticed everyone sharing their damn music preferences. But it's been cool seeing how many people have their top podcast as Dirt Talk, which is just mind-boggling. I joke about having three people listen to it, but there are more than three people. I hate to admit it, but it really is starting to spread. This year, we're almost at 200,000 downloads for the year. I think we'll get there before year end, and we got big goals for next year. Got a podcast studio coming down the road, and a whole lot of other people coming down the pipeline as far as who we're going to be talking to. So keep on sharing it. I appreciate everyone listening, and with that, We'll see you on the next one.